96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
I'm a stand-up guy. I fight. They can't push me around because black people have been pushed around too much.
That's the voice of Marion Barry during his last interview right here on the Daily Drum, June 25th of 2014. The former Ward 8 council member and D.C. mayor died 5 months later on November 23rd. On Saturday, an 8-foot-tall bronze statue of Barry will be unveiled outside of the Wilson Building. Well, tonight we're talking about Marion Barry and his legacy. My guests are former First Lady of the District of Columbia and founder of the Marion Barry Legacy Foundation, Cora Masters Barry, and Michael Rogers, chairman of the foundation and former D.C. administrator. We also have Hamil Harris, reporter for the Afro-American newspapers. You have a comment or question about our discussion tonight, the life and legacy of Marion Barry, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
It's a blessing to be here.
Good to be here.
Good to see you. Mrs. Barry, talk to me about your impressions of the statue, your heartfelt impressions. Do you like it?
No.
You don't?
I love it.
Okay.
It is the best likeness I've ever seen of anybody. My pastor, I took him out to get a look at it because he wasn't going to be in town for the unveiling, and I don't know if many of you know Reverend Willie Wilson from Union Temple Baptist Church. But
great pastor, great man.
Great pastor, great man, and yeah, a very serious black man.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and I quote, that the artist, Steve Weissman, was put on this earth to do this work and to do this statue. It is so live that you think Marion's just going to walk up to you and talk to you. It's like a miracle from God.
How difficult was it to get this done?
Not difficult at all. That's what's so interesting. The 7-panel process that the artist and the commission had to go through to get approval went like very easy. And the ultimate panel, the one that determines what goes on Pennsylvania Avenue, which are these people are federally appointed, their contribution to it and comment was the presentation that they received initially was for a 6-foot statue, and they didn't think it did him justice, and they insisted to make it 8-foot. Mm-hmm. So the process of getting it approved was seamless. Obviously, the process of getting it done, you know, is a process that goes with the territory. But basically, it was pretty much an easy process.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Rogers, you were nodding your head. You obviously agreeing with what Mrs. Barry was saying. You worked in the Barry administration. What does something like this mean to you? Because you're not a native.
Right.
And although, like you say, you've been here long enough to claim it, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think, one, the statue is a very fitting acknowledgement of the contributions that Marion Barry made to this city. And I was nodding because when you say the process was, nothing's easy in government, but it sure moved fast. Think about this. The mayor died on November 23rd. The mayor announced the commission to commemorate and recognize him on March 3rd, I think.
6th.
March 6th, I think it was.
Birthday.
And then charged the commission to bring back recommendations in a year. We did it in less than a year. We did it by December of 15, just a little over a year after he died. And then the mayor put money in the budget, the very next budget in 16, to make this statute possible, and the process moved along. So it has moved at a very fast clip.
He died in 2014. The statue's gone up in 2018.
Which one could argue is pretty fast.
No, it's
not
traditional.
And if I may, and you could probably tell me better than I could say, I'm sure that Mayor Barry would have said a lot faster than he would have probably thought.
We talked a lot about his legacy and how he wanted to be remembered, and we had a lot of different things that we discussed. Never, ever did we discuss a statue.
What was the thing that he said that you found most striking about his legacy?
What do I think is most striking?
Yeah, what
about
he said to you.
Or what he said to me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he pointed out one thing. I do know that he didn't want to be forgotten. Mm-hmm. And he wanted people to always remember, you know, that he loved them and that he had the people and the city in his heart. And everything that he did with the intention of improving or empowering or helping, even when things didn't go well. That was what his heart was.
Mm-hmm. Jamil, that's an interesting piece because, as I said in the intro, he's the city's longest serving mayor, 16 years.
And you know, Harold, it is so appropriate for his statue to be on Pennsylvania Avenue with the Wilson Building behind it. So many times, I don't think I ever had an appointment to see the mayor, but I certainly got opportunities on Pennsylvania Avenue because as soon as he walked out that building, people would come up to Mayor Barry, Mayor Barry, and he would talk. He would always say, "What's your name? What are you doing?" I mean, he held court outside that Wilson Building. And the fact that that building to the left was the White House. He was the mayor who could talk to Ronald Reagan, talk to Bush, talk to, you know, Clinton, as well as he could look to the other side, to the east, and be the hero of not just all the city, but southeast and the capital. He was the mayor of this town. He made clear that people understood that you're not going to pass anything federal government unless I have my hand print in it. And I think that's what's so amazing, and it's hard to think that Marion won't be there to say, "Mr. Mayor, I need a quote. Can you talk to me?" Again, he was about the people, and people will fight in this town for Marion Barry.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the life and legacy of former D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. There will be a statue, a bronze statue, 8 feet tall, unveiled this Saturday morning outside of the Wilson Building City Hall. For those of you listening outside of the D.C. area, if you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open. Let's go to Joanne. Joanne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
I am so, so very pleased that the commission moved so fast to do this. There is not one who is more deserving. I just heard McBarry say that in discussions with him, he just said that he didn't want to be forgotten. No way. No way. All he did, not only for D.C., but particularly for black folk in D.C., to be able to stand proudly, to be able to be in ownership, to be able to be a part of making D.C. what it is now. Right on, Marion Barry.
Joanne, thank you so much for your comment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Keith, calling from Southwest. Thanks for calling, Keith. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold Fisher. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good to talk to you again on your show. I'd just like to comment tonight on the goodness and the things that Marion Barry was, in my mind, was deeply respected. And I inquired the blessings of him being basically the mayor of the city. And second of all, how he turned this city around. Third of all, how he created jobs for his people. And last of all, most of the people who live over in Southeast and Southwest, where I live at now, we was fed. The ones that couldn't feed themselves around Thanksgiving time and wanted something to eat, he made it very possible out of his money, out of his concern and love for the folks over there in Southeast and Southwest. He made sure those folks ate well and had something to be thankful for. And I'd just like to say that statue that's going up is in great a commemoration of the good things this man, this civil rights leader did that ought to be commemorated and remembered for. Thank you all and have a good night.
Keith, thank you so much. I appreciate your comment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the life and legacy of Marion Barry, D.C.'s longest serving mayor, and not to be forgotten, he was also a Ward 8 council member. A bronze statue of the former mayor will be unveiled at the Wilson Building Saturday morning at 11:30. And his wife, she says it's a really, really good likeness. And so certainly a lot of us are looking forward to that. I've always wanted to ask you, Mrs. Barry, how did you meet him? And this is why I ask that, because everybody already knew who he was. So it wasn't like you just said, oh, well who are you?
You know? I met him in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
We've known each other forever, just about. At WUST?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There Wust. Was a rally mm-hmm. there for mm-hmm. Walter Fauntleroy when he was running for a non-voting delegate, our first election. And Marion walked in. He had a big cowboy hat, and he introduced himself to me, and I introduced myself to him, and they called him up to speak, and he handed me his hat. Mm-hmm. I'd never met him before. When he got up on the stage, I gave his hat to somebody else and left. So that's the first time I ever met him.
But at what point, you know, obviously that was, you know, long before you two were married. And what was the moment when, you know, he looked at you differently?
Well, I'm a political person.
Right.
And I always have been since 15 years old. So I got involved with the campaign for Walter Fauntleroy, and Marion supported Walter Fauntleroy. And then later on, Marion decided to run for school board. He wasn't an elected official then. He was just with Pride. And I signed up on the campaign. And from that point until the day he died, politically, we were always political, ideological, compatible. I always believed very strongly in the liberation of our people. I came out of California. I was with the Black Panthers. So we were very compatible with our value system. So we remained and friends. I got married once. How many times did I get married? Once. He got married twice. At some point we converged in the 90s, you know, where the friendship, to quote him, the friendship turned to love ship. Mm-hmm. Around the time of his troubles. But we knew each other forever and were friends and political colleagues forever.
I've always wanted to ask you, you know, about that, you know, that personal side. Because, again, everyone saw you as a political person. The mayor, obviously, is a political person. And, you know, so a lot of folks are always curious about, you know, how... was that?
But yeah, what was so powerful? People, everybody loves Mary Berry now. They know, but there was a time in this town where people were mean. They were nasty. At the Washington Post, it was rough. And the thing about it that I liked about Mary Berry and Ms. Cora is that they stood up. They stood up and they kept their heads up and they kept have the vision for the people. And during that time period, it's easy, like somebody, everybody's on the top, but to go from the top and get knocked down, but then come back up. That comeback story is one of the greatest political stories, because he never stopped loving people, and she was faithful and she was there. And it's tough. I mean, I think you used to work with the boxing commission. It's like, mm-hmm. You're talking about the rope-a-dope. That was a political rope-a-dope and still standing. Yeah. So I just think it's important. Talk about a woman standing by a man. Because mm-hmm. I remember when I was at the Afro and the trips to the prison and all that stuff. Oh, I was there. Miss Murphy and stuff. So people now, everybody going to pat you on the back now. But during the time when nobody wanted to pat you on the back, this sister stood and she was there.
You wanted to make a comment real quick, Mr. Rogers. I've got about 30 seconds before my break.
I was just going to say, Hamil talked about how Marion Barry fought. He was a man of courage. He had the courage to stand up and fight for the right things all the time. And that's the one thing that I admired about him, and I'm sure a lot of people admired about him. He was a real warrior for the people.
I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about the life and legacy of Marion Barry. But, of course, we want to remind you that the unveiling of the Marion Barry statue will be Saturday morning at 11:30. Chances are you probably need to get there a little bit earlier than that if you want to see it. I suspect there will be a lot of people there, of course, on Pennsylvania Avenue outside of the Wilson Building. Mrs. Barry, good to see you. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for
it.
Having me. I'll see everybody on the 3rd.
Absolutely. 3 days before his birthday, right?
Yeah.
There you go. That is The Daily Drum on WHUR. We're going to be here and we're going to come back and talk more about this in just a bit. CeCe in Maryland, we're going to talk to you. Patricia also in D.C., we're going to talk to you. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR 96.3. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the life and legacy of former D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. There will be an unveiling of a bronze statue of Mr. Barry, the former mayor, in front of the Wilson Building on Pennsylvania Avenue this coming Saturday at 11:30. For those of you who would like to attend, certainly you should arrive early to have a view of this magnificent statue. My guests are the former First Lady of the District of Columbia and founder of the Marion Barry Legacy Foundation, Cora Masters Barry. We also have Michael Rogers, chairman of the foundation and former D.C. administrator, and Hamil Harris, reporter with the Afro-American Newspapers. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk about my first, I don't even want to call it my first interaction with Marion Barry. He was not mayor at the time. The first time that I knew that he was a person, as a native, but I was still very, very young. And that was during the Hanafi Muslim takeover of the District of Columbia. Mr. Rogers, you remember that day?
I do remember that day. I worked on Connecticut Avenue, and that takeover was on my path home.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I had not seen the news. That was before you had every office had a television in it. And when I was trying to go home, that part of the city was roped off, and then I later learned what happened. Yes, mm-hmm. But I do remember that day.
Of course, he was an alderman at that time. They were called aldermen. Mm-hmm. Were they council members at that time?
At large.
At large. He was wounded. Of course, WHUR lost a reporter on that day on the fifth floor because the elevator faced the press room. Hamil, talk to me about that particular day and how that day really brought Marion Barry's name to the fore.
Well, I think, people knew him for talking about pride and taking pride in yourself. But when Hanafi Muslims, and again, I was not here. I was in Florida. But I remember the whole aftermath and how the district building and how the reporter, like I said, Maurice, I forgot his last name, was shot, in the press room. But the key thing is Marion Barry, not the fact that he had been shot, not the fact that he had been wounded, but he still stood strong. It was like he declared that we still are a city, and he just was a warrior. And it's like the young people say he had street cred, but he had political credibility.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
He was all of that, but Marion also, I was there. And Marion also utilized that as an opportunity to run for the next office, which was mayor, to the point that I saw him on TV and I called him. I said, really, really, Marion? He was like, I'm for the people. So he never passed up an opportunity. He's very, very wise. So I have to say it was a dangerous thing because the bullet was this close from his heart. But once he was out the woods, he capitalized on it to get the sympathy he needed to catapult him into running for mayor. So I just want to add that because that's the fact.
You were there. That's right.
I was there.
And by the way, you were talking about Maurice Williams, our other WHUR, yes. WHUR reporter. After that, how was his campaigning, his style of politician different for D.C. that was still a city that was developing politically?
Well, Marion was he was a civil rights activist, a black power activist, and he, as Andy Young said in a video that's going to be shown on the 3rd, he took the movement into government. So his style of politic and his style of campaigning outdistanced anybody. He touched everybody. He shook everybody's hand. He had a Barry Army, which was I was a part of it. And the way we did our business, Marion's first political gatherings were like 10, 15 people at a time. He'd go and sit in people's basements or their family rooms or in their backyards. He collected voters one by one by one. He had a very hands-on approach. He was running against the incumbent mayor, Mayor Washington, who was just finishing up his first elected term, and the chairman of the city council, Sterling Tucker. Mayor Washington was seen as sort of like an establishment person, and Sterling Tucker was seen as establishment old school person, and Sterling Tucker was seen as a pretty much middle class establishment person. And then here comes this dude who's just bold and brash and smart as he can be, brilliant. And I don't know if people know this, but the Washington Post gave him the best endorsement I've ever seen anybody give anybody since then. They endorsed him. Ward 3 came out strong for him, and they're the reason Marion won that first election, because that first campaign, the black vote was divided between Mayor Washington and Sterling Tucker and a handful of people for Marion Barry, but the white people wanted him because he was so different, and they were excited about him until he became mayor. Mm-hmm. And then once he became mayor and made his first appointments, he made a black police chief. He made them throw away the test for the fire department because it was discriminatory. So he promoted a lot of black people in the police and the fire department, made a black fire chief. And then the worst thing he could have done is he then enacted that 33% minority contract rule.
God forbid.
And that by the time he got to doing all of that empowerment, they were through with him. They never voted for him again. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else did.
And that's
the history.
And I think the thing that I wrote on my little pad, he truly was a master builder. Because when you think about all this construction, and I know right now they have the business roundtable, and the business leaders, the African-American business leaders, are still fighting to get their 33%, still trying to build. But when Marion Barry walked on the scene, people knew he would remember the black business people. He would challenge the biggest developers, I think, with Jeffrey Korn or whoever these guys were.
But they all worked with him, though.
Worked with
they
him.
They loved him because he knew how to do business.
Jamal Douglas, you know, Douglas Development Corporation. You know, it's a lot of people behind the scenes that he took. Look at Southwest. It was like a cesspool, and now it's a beautiful Nationals Park. You know, the D.C. Convention Center was kind of limited, and I remember how he took these places and developed them. It takes years to develop this master plan.
Right.
8th Street, you know, now they got the trolley cars like New Orleans, but it wasn't like that all the time.
Mr. Rogers, how did you become involved with the Barry administration?
It's over a few years. I met Mayor Barry in 1977. I'd come to town to work for the City Management Association in 76. And my tie-in with him was that I was encouraging him to populate his new administration with African-American public administrators. I said, they're out there, because I was recruiting across the country, identifying minority public administrators. And he did that just that. He populated his administration with some of the brightest African-American men and women in public administration. That had a great administration here. They did a great job here, and then they went off and did great jobs in other cities and in the private sector, even on Wall Street. So that began our association, and then I worked at the convention center and knew him there. But I became a city administrator years later after I'd gone through a couple of positions in New York and in the private sector and had worked for Ron Brown at the Commerce Department, and then came back at a very tough time for the city because of the financial crisis, and we worked shoulder to shoulder to figure it out.
What was the most difficult part of you coming back during that time? Obviously, you know, you mentioned the financial crisis, but there were so many other issues for D.C. During the 1980s, we had so much crime.
Right.
We had a crack epidemic. It's interesting, even as I digress just a little bit, just even in our business report, they were talking that Black ownership of housing has not changed in some 50 years. And interest rates back then were double digit. What do you remember as some of the most difficult times?
Well, when I came back, it was 94. It was his last term.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be in New York when during the 80s, when at the height of the crime problem in the city. But by that time, the police department had worked with the mayor to work through a lot of those issues, and things had kind of, you know, had gotten better, you know, on the crime front. But on the financial front, when the mayor won the primary, on the Hill before he took office, there was already discussions about a control board.
Mm-hmm.
And that had nothing to do with what he had done the last 4 years, but the previous administration. But nonetheless, that was going to be a challenge of this new administration. Would Marion Barry, in his fourth term, be allowed to run the government? And it was a very artful navigation, if you will,
mm-hmm.
to propose issues and get the control board support so that we could move the government forward. And it was a battle every day. And, you know, Dr. Bremer, who was chair of the control board, and the mayor, did not always agree, mm-hmm. you know, and did not always say nice words to each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's documented. But at the end, the mayor pointed the direction for getting the city out of the financial crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And what he laid out as the things that needed to be done to fix the city's financial crisis, they ended up being the basis for the congressional act, the District Revitalization Act.
That's right.
They had the federal government had to take the unfunded pension
liability. Pension liability.
You remember that?
That's yeah. Right.
And the federal government took over the courts and the prison system. You know, it was about $1 billion worth of city costs.
A burden on the city. And that's so important because people talk about the control board. No, there was a control board, but when they were able to negotiate that unfunded pension, all these people who worked for the government, and D.C. bore the burden of paying this money out. So when that was lifted, and then you had the community development block grants, all these grants that nobody was using, it was Mayor Marion Barry working with the D.C. council. I remember as a reporter covered the council that passed those legislative. I would literally have to run to the mayor's office at 441, come back to the city hall, back and forth, find Karen Thompson Cole, find Rogers. I lost weight for a moment because these folks, and Marion would sit there and he would say, Hamil, get it right, spell it right. And I would have to sit there now crying, says, I'm on deadline for the Washington Post. I got to go. Mm-hmm. He said, no, we need to get this right. And it was so critical. And I remember when Ms. Norton went up with Newt Gingrich and the Republicans, that was governance. So it wasn't just Andrew Bremer talking to him, but these were African Americans, people who looked like us, who was running this nation capital. When I see all these yuppies and everybody now, this was a legacy of Marion Barry, of people who were sharp, the best political figures. And I think it doesn't get enough credit that it was just not him, but he pulled together a team. Like someone said, he made a lot of millionaires in this town.
Mm-hmm.
He made one, but he helped make a lot of millionaires.
Let me ask Mrs. Barry, how would you describe his political style, and how did it change, if at all, during the course of his time as mayor?
His political style?
Hmm?
Well, Marion had a gift, one, of finding good talent, and he had an ability to let the talent do their jobs. And so, and he was very non-traditional in his choices. So he held the record, and probably still does, for hiring, for instance, women in non-traditional positions that did, that women did not hold anywhere else in the country. Madeline Petty, director of Housing and Public Service. Carol Thompson, Cole, City Administrator. Gladys Snack, Office of Management and Budget. And I can go down the list. These were women, and he used to say, sometimes the best man for the job is a good woman. Mm-hmm. And so he had no bias in terms of who he would hire, as long as they were excellent and working hard. The other style about his style that made him an effective leader was that he was an easy person to deal with.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, he wasn't dictatorial. He wasn't nasty. He wasn't trying to break people down. He was tough, but he was fair. And he gave people chances. I mean, we used to say you would have to have committed an A1 felony to get fired by Marion, because he always believed in giving people chances or moving them somewhere where they could do, because his basic goal was to empower people, to lift people up, and he didn't like knocking people down. But he was very hands-on. Marion was a person you look up in your agency and he's walking in.
Including,
or somebody answering
Moore.
The phone, and it's the mayor, to see how you're answering the phone over there. So he had a pretty hands-on style.
Yeah, he was an excellent manager. Mm-hmm. You know, he could have been a city administrator in his own right, because mm-hmm. he had the skills, he knew the budget, he knew how to solve problems in government, and so he was excellent in that regard as well.
I need to take a break. When we come back, more about the life and legacy of former D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. 202-319-7810. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the life and legacy of former D.C. Mayor Marion Barry. And a reminder, on Saturday, an 8-foot-tall bronze statue of Barry will be unveiled outside of the Wilson Building on Pennsylvania Avenue. For those of you outside of the D.C. area who are not familiar, that is D.C.'s City Hall, where the mayor's office is, as well as the D.C. Council. My guests now are, of course, we continue with Michael Rogers, chairman of the Marion Barry Legacy Foundation and former D.C. administrator, and Hamil Harris, reporter with the Afro-American newspapers. Earlier, we talked about the last interview that he did here in June of 2014. It was a wide-ranging interview. He talked about where he was from Mississippi. You know, he talked about his family, civil rights, and we also talked about some of the low points. And when we talked about the Vista Hotel and the crack cocaine situation, this is what he said to me.
The Vista was 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have gone to that hotel. I shouldn't have gone up in that room, even though it was an FBI sting, even though 9 out of 12 jurors voted to acquit me on all charges. And I was convicted on another charge at another place, at Mayflower. I apologized to Sheeta and her family, because she's a victim too.
Mm-hmm.
I apologized to my wife, to Effie, and to Cora, and to Christopher. I apologize to the people of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
This country is a country of second chances, second and third chances.
Well, he ran through a lot of people. He, of course, he spoke, you know, about Rashida Moore, the woman who was in the hotel with whom he had a relationship. He talked about his first wife, Effie Barry. He talked about Cora Masters Barry, who just left our conversation. His son, Christopher, who is deceased. And he talked about, you know, D.C. But the thing I find most interesting, and this is for you, Mr. Rogers, because you said you were the city administrator in the 90s. He's talking about the second and third chances. You were there during that, as he says, second and third chance. How would you characterize that based on how was he different during that second and third chance after, you know, the prison time, you know, after, you know, getting sober and moving through all of those difficult things?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was focused, you know, and we had to be focused because on February 1st, a couple of days before I started the job, the audit had revealed a $722 million deficit. And it was clear that we had a challenge. It was clear to him that the people on the Hill were not happy about his return, and it was going to be one battle. So we had to drop our shoulders, put our heads down, and move forward based on his vision. He clearly had a vision for where he wanted to take the government. Now, he was always great about that. And his vision was easy to follow because it was very clear. It was about the people. There were some things he just wasn't going to do, you know, because it was not consistent with his values.
Please continue.
He was, you know, the first thing that when the control board was appointed, there was the view that he needed to cut the government. And people on the Hill figured that they needed a control board because Marion Barry wouldn't do it. All right. But he did what he had to do as a manager to move the government forward and to balance the budget. And that's what made him a good manager, because at the end of the day, he knew what he had to do, and he had the people around him to help him do that in order to get into a better position.
And it's funny how this was the beginning of what would become Anthony Williams, because remember, he was the CFO, the chief financial officer. He was going to the community meetings and getting to know people, and Marion was still the mayor, but they were. It was an evolution of a whole new generation of the new leaders. You know, he called them the Young Turks, you know. You know, and so again, he was moving aside, dealing with his health. Remember, because he had cancer, you had
diabetes,
cancer. And every time he had one of those moments, he would always use a scripture. You know, this joy I have, the world didn't give it to me. You know, the world didn't take it. He would always quote scriptures, and he always went spiritual. And again, I just think that we saw him coming back so many times, making a comeback politically, health-wise, and the city continued to grow. People fell in love with Washington all over again, and not just Democrats. Remember the Connie Newman, the control board. These were Republicans. Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House and all these.
And that was around the time of the Contract with America.
That's right.
Which some could argue was the face of a sweeping political change. When we began to see what we would term today conservative activism, right, you know, on the Hill. And even after he left the mayor's office and became the Ward 8 council member, Hamill, he was still busy.
It's very busy.
He was still extremely active. Talk to me about the Ward 8 council
member. He went to Ward 8. Again, people just talk about his other name. But he, you know, remember, Ward 8 had a very strong politician, Ms. Wilhelmina Rolock. Remember that? And the Washington Informer. And he went right in her backyard, and that was a tough election, but he was able to be elected and to bring in a whole new generation. Again, he had the political team. I still remember those Barry Caravans and Bob, what's it, Bob, he was his political organizer and was able to get people to vote. And again, he was at his best in mobilization. And I remember just people being excited once again. And he called it the resurrection of Ward 8. I mean, and then I remember when they built the Southeast Tennis Learning Center. I remember he telling me, he says, you know, he looked at Cora, and it was after they were no longer married, but he says, she really cares about this city. You know, I can still remember Effie Barrett, you know, working with the team. He just seemed like and Christopher, remember Christopher?
His son, yeah.
It was like, well, he take the place. So again, to his entire life, he always was about building, even though he would move on, but he was building this town.
What did he want from in your opinion, Mr. Rogers, when he was leaving the mayor's office, but before he became the Ward 8 council member?
Well, I think that he wanted the city to continue on the track that he had laid, because as Hamill pointed out, he was in fact the architect of modern day Washington. We can go down the map in terms of specific projects that spurred development. You know, down 14th Street, down U Street, you know, east of 15th Street toward the Convention Center and beyond, and creating jobs all along the way. He wanted to make sure that the Summer Youth Employment Program, you know, continued.
Yes.
That was very important to him. I mean, he had provided opportunity for so many young people in this city.
And seniors. Let us not forget.
Oh, that's yes, right.
Let us not forget that. The senior citizens, and this is kind of where my memory comes in, because, you know, I had two sets of grandparents. I know these days it's really difficult for some younger guys to even say that they knew their grandparents, but I had two sets of grandparents in Northeast near the Shrimp Boat, mm-hmm. Benning Road. And then I had another set in Southeast on the other side of East Capitol Street, just before you got to the Maryland line. All of them supported, you know, Marion Barry because, as he said earlier in the piece that you heard, that he cared.
Right.
And they felt that he cared about them and did not, and it wasn't just lip service for them.
The last thing I remember, and he was no longer the mayor, and Muriel Bowser was running for mayor. Marion called me and said, "Hamil, get up. You're not doing anything. Come down. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Go cover Muriel. Interview her." You know, and he remember him supporting her for the mayor.
Right.
Again, and he became this political prognosticator. I still have it on YouTube, him doing his analysis on who would win. And he said, you know, he picked Muriel and Vince's back and forth. But again, he was always engaged. And everybody saw him. They wouldn't say, "Hey, Councilmember Barry." He was always Mayor Barry. That mm-hmm. council name didn't fit too well, but everybody right. called him Mayor. Mayor Barry, Mayor Barry.
I only have about 30 seconds left, but I wanted to ask Mr. Rogers, as a you have a unique perspective because you're not a native, and you professionally had an opportunity to look at D.C. inside and out. From the perspective of his image as a black man, how would you describe it? Because I think for a lot of Washingtonians, particularly, you know, black people, that's how they saw him, as a black man. How would you describe the black man that was Marion Barry?
Marion Barry was a strong black man who understood where he came from, where he grew up. He understood those who made him who he was, his mother, the seniors around him. And he was a black man who was not afraid to show that he cared. As he walked around this town, for the young people, for the seniors, as you pointed out, he showed his heart. He was a leader who did not mind showing his heart. And that's why the people in Washington have always loved this man. You know, he once said that, "I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for Washington." That was a statement he made. And I think that's true, because we all know that there's only been one perfect leader to walk this earth.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
One that he would often speak about as well.
Absolutely.
Amen.
I want to thank Cora Masters Barry for spending some time with us. Also, Michael Rogers and Hamil Harris for talking to us. And don't forget the unveiling of the bronze statue of former D.C. Mayor Marion Barry, 11:30. Get there early. At D.C. City Hall, the Wilson Building, Saturday morning. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, February 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection.